Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SF Bayline, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just to remind you how to join us, we have Talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website, the www.talkshoe.com. Search for colleague 17702 or SFU on call or Starfleet Universe on call. You'll find us there. But if you want the best, the very best online live experience, you need to go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFU on call. You will find us there and you will definitely be able to join in with the chat room and enjoy their company and be able to discuss things that are on and off topic, which is fine. But I'm always thankful when they stick to at least talking about Starfleet battles. Onward and forward, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, X, whatever, you can do that by following me on sfuoncall. You know, same spelling as the Gmail account. Also, you want to follow my personal account. That's Paul Franz, P-A-U-F-R-A-N-Z. There's no T in that. And also, Franz Games, which is my business account, F-R-A-N-Z-G-M-E-S. You know, if you, there's no T in that. As you follow that, the main reason you want to follow that is, of course, see what's going on at SFU Online, what's going on with Starfleet Warlord, what's going on with FCOM Online. If there's any updates, you will see them there. At the moment, if Twitter ever decides to make it a pay-for service, yeah, like if it's, I might be going, see ya. But anyhow, moving forward, of course, lovely Talkcast gets into podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A2B this week. Steve Pickard has been working on the Orion Master Starship book. Also, released this week is the updated SFB module R6 that's now available both online as for e-tellers, you know, all the ebooks from, you know, Wireless 23, Drive-Thru RPG, and Wargame Vault. I truly like Warehouse 23 myself. And they have all three things there. The rule book, which is $13.95, the black and white SSD, that's $12.95, and the color SSD book, which is $15.95. That's if you buy the electronic copy. And if you want to buy a full hard copy of the actual module, it's $29.95 on the online store. And this week's found in the online store is F&E Civil War's single-sided counter sheet. It's only $4. It's 140 counters, and for just for $4, you get 140 counters. Now, these are single-sided counters for F&E Civil Wars. So, you know, for those times that you're going to be fighting with yourself, that's when you want to get these counters. And hey, 140 counters for only $4, I think that's pretty cheap. I think that's an excellent deal, especially if you want to play Civil Wars in F&E. Federation Empire, for those people who aren't in the know. And now you are in the know. Moving onward and forward, that's up in line tournament. The Sapphire Star 15 tournament started many weeks ago now. But round one is completed. Round two, there's one game completed. So we already have Peter Bakia make it to the semifinals. And I'm sorry, I forgot who he played against. They actually played today, and so it was completed today. And obviously, he posted there was an issue with the client. I got to reread that. I wasn't quite understanding where things are. Looked like he moved something into a weird position when it comes to the actual windows. I'm just trying to picture in my mind what he saw. But anyway, onward and forward. Another updates for online client stuff or Starfleet Warlord. I not gotten anything more done on the new website for Starfleet Warlord. I definitely need to get back to that. I might get something done this weekend. My guess at the moment is no. Because tomorrow night is, it's going to be bowling night. So I'm going to get home from bowling. I'm probably just going to sit down, watch, maybe be able to watch a little TV. Saturday, I'm going to go help Doug move from his current place to another place. And when I get back, I'll probably have to do Starfleet Warlord stuff after I feed everyone. Because I cook dinner around here. And lastly, and least not leastly, I'm going to be part of the Knights of Columbus. There's a Jack Frost parade in a township couple doors down from me, and I'm going to be in that. So, and when I'm not doing that, my wife wants me to start actually raking the leaves. So, so it's going to be a busy weekend. So I don't think I'll be getting around to that. I might get a little done. I'll have to wait and see. But don't expect me to get it completed this week. I'm guessing at least another couple weeks, and there's a decision I need to make. It'll take me only a few hours to complete, or it'll take me another 8 hours to complete. Moving on and forward, when it comes to the library report, nothing new to say there. Actually, I got some new ones. I think I got a correction from Frank, which I have not yet posted up. Forgive me for not posting that update, Frank. I will get to that ASAP. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Not too bad. How are things?
Good. Working better now. And hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. And, of course, the one, the only, Doug, how you doing, Doug?
I'm here. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. Doing good. Okay.
Yes. There.
Nice and quiet evening for a change.
Huh. No bars?
No, not a bar tonight. Just a Walmart parking lot.
Truck's not acting up. No,
the truck has decided it's going to behave itself for a little while at least. Knock on simulated wood.
Okay. Now, to continue on, or at least start the topic. For this evening, which I promised Gary that I would do, which is ships to be added. Ships that will be added or be part. Okay, the better one, be part of Module C6R. Which is what ADB has been asking people to do. The thread starts off with, any ideas beyond Q-ships? So it's like, okay, guys, anything but Q-ships, because we already know Q-ships. You got it. Actually, the first thing actually came to mind was actually a spin-off of Q-ships. Not quite the same, but a kind of spin-off, but I'm not sure if it's already been at least documented. It's possible it's already been documented. I'm assuming it has, which is like armed freighters. Auxiliary ships, like a large auxiliary. Freighter or armed freighter. I'm trying to get it right.
A lot of the R1 type stuff, but for the C6 empires.
Right. The Pravians or the Carnivans or the Vudar, Paladines. You know, they're supposed to be for the Lost Empire. Yeah, Lost Empires. Yeah, I know, Gary. You mentioned that you really wanted to have you felt like focusing module C6R on the Carnivans and the Paravian, that'd be a good idea, and then have C7 or maybe C7R would be for Borak and the Paladines. But like, obviously the big question there is going to be, number one, is there enough ships to actually put to split it between two different modules? I understand the idea behind that is a good idea, which is focus on these two empires, and then on the next one, the focus on two different empires. And I agree that would be nice to be able to do that. The big question, of course, is going to be that, is there enough ships that need to be done? I'm assuming most of these ships would, since the Carnivans, again, they were early years, and this is kind of Lost Empire. My understanding of this is, I know that Steve Cole doesn't want to go down alternate timeline thing, because he mentioned that. Actually mentioned it to, no, I was going to say today. Actually, last Thursday is when he mentioned it. He said, I really don't want to do any more alternate timelines. Well, for its worth, I don't think early contact with the Paravians would actually change the IC at all. And they would regard them as monsters or some unknown sort, not a neighboring empire, which I agree with that idea. And I can understand the whole thing with alternate histories, because the biggest issue with doing alternate histories at all is that when you do an alternate history, the idea is not to go too far off the rails. Because if you go too far off the rails, then it doesn't become an alternate history. It becomes more of a wish factory, you know, because there has to be some logic about it, and some idea, at the very least, some idea of cause analysis. You know, if this happened, what actually would have happened? You know, obviously the biggest one is with, let's say, you know, Germany in World War II. You know, if Germany actually would have got its act together, and Hitler wouldn't have been such a crazy and not
in charge.
Yeah, have to be in charge. Yeah. And let's say that the Germans actually won, you know, actually were able to get the allies that they needed to actually conquer the world, them and their allies, you know, we'd be living in a totally different world. And the question is always the consequences of that. So I can understand why he did a whole thing, a whole module just for the Romulans and the possible alternate histories for the Romulans. It's like, okay, that's it. I did it for the Romulans. Because really, I understand for the Romulans, because the Romulans are, they're there. You know, they had the biggest question mark just because of the beginning of their timeline. They took so long to actually get tactical warp and go forward, which is different from everybody else. Everybody else, you know, got tactical warp approximately the same time. So, you know, so that's definitely would be the biggest question when it comes to alternate histories. Obviously, for the Andromedans alternate history, it's actually, it's in those circular dependencies kind of thing, that if the Darwin would never come back from the time rift, you know, and told everyone, hey, this is what you need to do, you know, and the Andromedans would have conquered, the galaxy, the Milky Way, because of that they had already done it. In the actual history, which if you think about it, the actual history is that the all the galactic empires were defeated by the Andromedans. That's the actual history. And then the history was changed by the Darwin coming back. So time travel is always a fun thing to think about,
And it's canon.
Oh, I know, for Starfleet Universe, yeah.
including the source documents. So what was that? Assignment Earth? And then there was another one? That was Assignment Earth, was the spinoff with Gary Seven that didn't go anywhere. There was even another one even well past that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can't keep out of time travel.
Oh, understood. If you actually look at one of the alternate histories when it comes to Romulans, I actually didn't know about it, which was that the Romulans had actually run into an earlier a Klingon ship that had also fallen through a rift in time and gone into the future. It's they didn't realize it at the time, and basically just whatever, but the alternate history pointed out that what if there actually were Romans actually found out about the ship and had basically gotten the technology from the Klingons before the Romans, the Klingons had formally made contact with the Romulans. Which is interesting. Went down that path just because of Steve Cole mentioned let's not go down that path.
So we went down that path. Yeah. Check.
Well, come on.
Yeah. There's a reason.
Yeah.
There's a reason some rabbit holes aren't meant to be gone down.
True.
Yeah.
Agreed. That's I 100% agree. But I figured I chased down that rabbit hole because it was mentioned, and more importantly, that we have had already visited the Romulan module and gone down those few rabbit holes that actually were really well documented. Steve Cole, I can't say that for sure. But the feeling I got from reading the text when it comes to alternate histories is that Steve Cole got bored of it. because
the thing is, you got so many different factions that it's like, how many lifetimes will it take for them to do all that?
Yeah.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah, it's so complicated right now with everything else that somebody just today on the BBS suggested that they pull together a consolidated product of all the SSDs that have been published in Captain's Log since the first one all the way through the most recent in some kind of gazetteer, even though those show up in other products. If you look at it trying to get into something that's not in basic, not in advanced, and not in the first C module for whatever empire, then you go down a long, dark tea time of, okay, I have to get R2 for this ship, and R6 for this ship, and R1 for this ship. And next thing you know, you're scratching your heads going, when did my $30 game become a $500 investment?
Oh, understood.
Yeah, about 30 years ago when you bought the thing the first time.
Yeah, that was the first mistake, right?
Well, that's the first taste of the addiction,
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, don't get me started with addiction. I'm just thinking about the F&E guys. I'm sorry. When you start actually measuring your counters by weight, you got a problem, sir.
No, you don't have a problem. You have the solution.
I know. I've got the solution. Fire.
No, bad.
I think that
you don't
the
fire is... the counters. Yeah. You need the counters. You need to have a massive stack of counters on the table where, for you to build a castle in front of you where you can go, and everybody in front of you go, oh God, not again. Let's do something else.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to adjust that down just a tiny bit. Okay. Camera does seem to be a little too high. Okay, that looks better. Yeah, I agree there. Sorry, I was reading guest Dave's post on Twitch, which is, CL Double Nickel is almost a year late. I agree there. And I'm waiting. I'm just waiting. What am I waiting for? I'm waiting for Steve Call to go, hey, I need a couple of articles from you. It's a well, because invariably part of the couple of articles are obviously, you know, a rundown when it comes to Starfleet Warlord is okay, a rundown of all the games that have happened since the last time we've actually published a captain's log. That list is getting pretty long. Yeah. But hopefully, that I will be able to, you know, we won't run into that issue. And I'll have something better to write about, you know. Problem is, I'm not sure what the holdup is for the CL Double Nickel.
As far as I can tell, I don't know either. There hasn't been anything really posted, so whatever it is it's hush hush. I did see a hint that Steve Cole put on the BBS yesterday about super secret project number whatever.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it could be that he was waiting for a solid word on that to put in the scanner on the Scanner Darkly section of Captain's Log. So it might not be long now. Who knows? Other than Steve. Of course, Steve probably has a good idea when he wants to do whatever.
Yep. Though, I when it comes to Steve, the one thing I'm glad he's actually started doing, which is slowing down. I.e., on the weekends, he actually takes a break.
That's important.
Oh, it's very important. I feel like you need at least a day off. You know, it's strange that it might be a little preachy here, but you know, God created the earth in six days and the seventh day he rested. Well, and as they say, you know, God made the Sabbath for man, not man for the Sabbath. You know,
right?
That kind of thing. You know. The idea is that we need a day off. We need a day of rest, a day of not focusing on work, you know, all the time. And unfortunately, in the world these days, you know, it seems like the whole almighty dollar has become our idol, as they say. Mm. You have to be busy. You have to be busy. Like, no, you don't. Busy is an ultimate demon, I think, because of sometimes the best ideas that you get is when you're not thinking. You're taking a shower. You're going for a walk. You know, when you're not actively thinking of things, let your brain just kind of congeal it, and you can come up with these great, great, great ideas. You know. But sorry, we're down that one. Do we still have Gary? Because I've not heard anything from him. Gary, you still there?
I was waiting for you to invite me to have a chat because I didn't want to interrupt the flow of conversation that you're having there.
Understood. Understood.
Yeah, we do have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to opinions, don't we?
Yeah. Well, we got what. Four people here and five or six different opinions?
Eight if you ask.
And nine if we're honoring.
Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah, yay.
And 10 once we start talking about them.
Then you have the opinion on the opinions. Oh, yay, yay. Okay.
Okay.
So, Gary, back to non-reality. What would you like to see out of C6R?
Okay, so just to set the whole table, I guess. Module C6 has about 67 SSDs for the Paragons and about 70 or so for the Carnivons. And it's a really thick volume. Like, I don't know if any of you have the physical version of Module C6, but it's quite hefty compared to the standard SSD module, like even another C module. Like, it's definitely on the plus size.
Yes, it is.
And the thing is, though, is that it's a lot of that is because the rule book has to include the modern updated rules for things like quantum wave torpedoes and death bolts and disruptor cannons and so on. And also a full list of R sections for the new ships and fighters and PFs and so on. And then also some scenarios so you can actually like have samples in which to play these games, these empires. And so there wasn't room then to have anything more than just those two empires in the modern era. And one of the things I wanted to do in the thread that's existing now for C6R, well, there already was a thread for C6R, but this one, the C6RR, was to basically try to demonstrate how, personally speaking at least, I don't think that there's enough room in the sequel product that's branded C6 something to have anything other than those two empires again, with the possible exception of maybe a couple of ships for the wind cluster, like, because one of the Carnivon timelines that's in C6, the winds develop as normal, and the Carnivons are kind of like a neutral empire to the northwest of them. So in that timeline, it's not unreasonable to imagine that the wind navy uses disruptor cannons as well as all the standard weapons that they use. And it's also probably not unreasonable for the Carnivons to maybe sell a few frigates or destroyers to the winds, like the same way that you've got like the Kzinti and Laren and Klingon hulls that the winds modify and use for their home defense. So I think it'd be interesting if there was somewhere where you could basically offer like a handful of wind Paragon or wind Carnivon ships. Although I actually think in terms of non-factory adjustments, I think that the Paragon ship would be better to not modify too much because it can land on planets. So it might almost be more useful for the wind cluster to use that ship to go outside the cluster and then come back because it's more flexible in terms of where you can stash it or where you can land and, you know, transfer goods or whatever. Because I mean, the topic was basically talking about the Borak and Teledyne and also the Fudar. Now there already is a thread called for Module C7, which basically, in theory at least, would take what is still technically playtest material for Module E3 and E4 and turn it into a formally published module for the Borak and Teledyne. And I think there's probably too much material for even those two empires for a single module either, because I'll get to that later. But in any case, I don't think either should fit in C6R. And the Vudar, because they're a quote-unquote real empire, even if they're not a full-fledged empire, they're still subject to the Klingons. They're like a satrapy. Right. They're not an independent empire. But right. Nonetheless, they're still real enough by the time of the General War, where they should be in the same kind of R modules that the Vudar ship's already in. Because like for the last several years worth of like decade or two worth of products, if there's like a module R11 or module R12 or something like that comes out, the Vudar ships that are equivalent to other Empire ships that are released around the same time are in those products. So I think that there's probably not enough Vudar ships to put into a standalone product, but I don't think there's the same need for that either. I think they're okay chipping away at them the same way that they've been done to date. So, but although I would say, though, on a side note, is I'd be very interested if they ever did like a threat file for the Juggernaut Empire, as in basically work up like what a full campaign compatible version of the Juggernaut Armada, including things like star bases and stuff, what that would be like, so that people could basically, you know, take them to a different setting like Alpha or Omega or whatever, and then unleash them and see what happens. The Andromedans pretty much stole the thunder in terms of being the big bad extragalactic invader, but you know, like, they're still, like, for example, we probably won't see Andromedans in the M81 home galaxy. So in theory, we could, because there is a Captain's Log fiction story that looks like it's leading towards the Juggernauts having a go at the Sartorian in the home galaxy. So in principle, you could do a scenario where the Juggernauts invade in force, and then how would that turn out, sort of thing. But anyway, so long story short, once again, I reckon that D6R should focus primarily on the Carnivons and Paravians.
Right.
But one of the things I wanted to do is to actually run the numbers and actually show my homework, so to speak, in terms of why I think that is. So if you have the thread up there on your screen there, Paul.
Yes, I do.
It might be that one of the posts I posted actually includes like a version one of a proposed list, because I didn't want to try to list up the Paravians and the Carnivons both, because I think it's better to focus on the Paravians first, and then only once there's a clear sense of what kind of ships should or should not be in this product, then the equivalent Carnivon list can be drawn based on that, if that makes sense.
Understood, but, understood.
The main difference would be that, yeah.
One quick question about the Paravians, which is, are these the Paravians that... Okay, no. Okay, no, this... Paravians say they're from the Alpha Sector. Okay, not the ones that made it to the Omega Octant. Correct?
Well, so in terms of my personal preference, my number one priority is more Omega stuff. Barring Module X2, of course, which is what, you know, because X2 unlocks so many other cool options. If X2 is going to take, which X2 is going to take a long while to develop anyway, but in terms of products that cover quote-unquote real empires and that also don't need X2 to wait for X2 to be done, then there's so much material that can be added to Omega, like probably half a dozen modules, if not more, just for the pre-existing empires, and then also for the new empires, like the Paravians of Omega and the Zosman Marauders and so on. But, you know, the second preference would be for the what if empires that are in Alpha, like the Paravians and Carnivons, because I reckon that any Paravian SSDs that get added to this product, as long as it's reasonable for them to show up in Omega, I think that they should be at least potentially considerable for the Paravians of Omega to basically borrow. The primary difference would be things like, because Omega doesn't have advanced shuttles, at least not for, well, we don't know what X-ships in Omega look like, but I personally would say that an advanced shuttle should only be on Omega X-ships, if that makes sense. So if you were using the same SSD, you just ignore those little A boxes for the advanced shuttle. And maybe some of the introduction of the weapons might be different and so on. But yeah, so basically, I kind of like to see that any, and also I should point out that ADB has recently hinted that some of the Carnivons might have historically escaped to the Sargasso Storm Zone.
And
there's the new range of products that could be done for Sargasso, real empires that would include the Carnivons. And so, in theory, any of the material that's in Module C6 already, some of that could be directly usable for the Sargasso Carnivons if it was reasonable to do so, because
For example,
in Sargasso, the Carnivons develop modern weapons. And so I would give them the same disruptor cannon. There's no need to create a new rule for the disruptor cannons when there's already a perfectly serviceable one in Module C6. So I think that would actually help cut down on the workload in terms of designing Sargasso as a new and interesting setting.
Agreed. The main reason I ask is because, in my mind, if you're talking about the Omega Praetorians, those are basically, those were the surviving Praetorians from the Omega Octant versus an alternate history in the Alpha Octant where the Praetorians lived on. They weren't wiped out by the Sun Snake and the Gorns. You know, so it changes the focus in my mind on what could I, you know, what possibly the Praetorians could have had if the Empire would have continued to grow in the Alpha Octant versus ships that would have been part of the Omega Octant Praetorians that were, you know, as they were, you know, in Omega, which was a little different Praetorians. I mean, because of what happened, basically. They are the same Praetorians, well, just that their survival is a little different.
Let me give you a couple of examples.
Okay.
So if you look at the Jindarians, now it's said that Jindarians exist in the Omega Octant, and they also exist in the Legend Magellanic Cloud.
Right.
Now, a while back on the BBS, I was asking, okay, so which Jindarians exist in the LMC? And basically what it boiled down to was that until Operation Unity arrives, the Jindarians should be assumed any of the ships that are in module F1. It's F1, isn't it? Because F2 is the Vudar.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So any of the ships in module F1 or any other product like module R6, any of the Jindarian ships that have a year in service date of Y1, it is assumed that they're the same ships they've been using for 100,000 years in all regions of space. So if you're creating a scenario in the Magellanic Cloud and you're using Jindarians before Operation Unity, then those exact same ships and rules are there. Same phasers, same warp railguns, and same asteroid shield rules and stuff, same metal hull ships and so on. And there actually is a scenario in Captain's Log that shows them. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And the main difference so far is that now there's not a lot of history after Operation Unity, which has been posted for the Magellanic Cloud. But that's actually one reason why I think a new Magellanic module has to wait until module X2, because we need to know what the future history of Alpha in X2 is before we can work out the future history of the Magellanic Cloud in module C5R.
Right, right.
But what is known is that in module X1R, there's actually an entry, there's a couple of new Jindarian X-ships that they give you. And it actually allows those same X-ships to be used, basically says, after Operation Unity, the Jindarians of the LMC adopted X-ships.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't adopt fighters or PS.
Right.
So as long as it's not a carrier or a fast patrol ship tender, then you can basically let the LMC Jindarians use those same X-ships. And the assumption is that basically they acquire the technology from the Alpha Empires and so on. So the technology is still going in the same direction. Now, right. On the other hand, you've got the Federal Republic of Aurora in Omega. Now, their story is different because when they arrived in Omega, they only had the technology that was in the Aurora system at the time they were transferred.
Right.
So they only had the Terran ships, like the light cruiser and the police for Corvette. And they had an Orion cruiser, which conveniently had a cloaking device on board. So their technology tree from the very beginning had by necessity to go in a very different direction to the Federation, which of course is what makes the Federal Republic so interesting.
Right.
It's basically a what if Terran whole faction made real. And also with cool toys that they don't get in Alpha, like tracking missiles and that sort of thing.
Right, and the whole thing with the FRA really is you've got these far-flung different races from the Alpha Octant being thrown together and saying, you're familiar with each other, but there's a big universe out there that wants to kill you. So you have to basically come together as a collective empire And also from that, you have the different variety of technologies from the different empires coming together there and forming a new empire using these disparate technologies. So which makes it all the more interesting.
Is also correct. Like there is, like, for example, their destroyer, which sadly is still not on Shapeways, is a hybrid design between a Klingon F5 and a Federation police ship, whatever. So yes, I mean, that is definitely a factor. And also, Captain's Log 53 includes the SSDs for the Lyran and Klingon ships that were brought into FRA service, like with FRA technology and so on. So, but the thing is that I don't think the same would necessarily apply to the baseline Caribbeans of Omega.
Right.
So now, again, this is my personal thing. I mean, like, we have been hoping that there'll be a future update file or preview pack which will actually save for sure. But I think that for the Omega baseline for the Caribbeans, I would basically say that, practically speaking, both from an in-universe development and also from an actual game design perspective, I think it's just as well to lean as heavily into the module C6 material as is reasonable. So I personally would say they should use the same quantum light torpedo rules. It works perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they should use some of the same SSDs. So, and also that means that, you know, the miniatures that are on Shapeways, you don't have to buy a whole new bunch of miniatures because, you know, getting a new Omega ships on Shapeways is, you know, it's up to the modelers to decide if they want to do it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see a reason not to leverage the miniatures that already exist. So, but the thing is, though, is that that doesn't mean that the Omega Paradians don't do anything interesting themselves, because you recall from Captain's Log 54, the anti-proton variants show up. So it's not a coincidence that the playtest SSDs use the same ships that have Shapeways miniatures that are in Module C6. And so there's a few other weapons and stuff that the Omega's Paradians get, distinct from what's in Alpha. But long story short is that if the Paravians get like something like a light cruiser,
mm-hmm.
I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be the same light cruiser SSD, more or less, than the one that we already have in print for Module C6, because if that encourages more people to buy Module C6, the better.
Right.
And similarly, for example, there's no fast ships in Omega. So I would say that in Alpha, yes, the Paravians in Module C6 have a fast cruiser or they have a light dreadnought. But unless fast ships are introduced to Omega in the future, which they might never be, I would say, no, you don't use that SSD in Omega, so because they were never developed that technology there.
Mm-hmm.
So to get to Module C6R, the primary focus of the list that I drew up on the board is what the Alpha Octant Paravians, the ones from Map Sheet P, would in theory have, and which they don't have SSDs for already. But saying that, in future, like once Module C6R is done, then I would say that if there's a reasonable number of these ships that could exist in for the Omega Paravians, then they can be basically borrowed, double dipped, so to speak. So you're basically making it that there's if a future Omega product had the Omega Paravians, it could then focus on the unique ships that they have. So for example, if there's only so much space for SSDs, then those SSDs can be used for things like anti-proton variants or other kind of like unique toys that they have relative to what the Alpha Paravians have. So that's my own theory,
Mm-hmm.
But so anyway, I guess we don't have too much time, but I just wanted to have a quick summary of what I think Module C6R should have for the Alpha Paravians, at least. Do you have it up there?
Yes, I do. Got the first generation X ships.
Correct.
Which is, of course, the heavy cruiser, the command cruiser, the war destroyer and war cruiser, You got the, of course, the frigate, the survey, CWP. Remind me. Oh, okay. CWS, you know, and then we have CSV, which strike carrier? All right.
CSV.
There's a lot of, that's because in Module X1R, most of the Alpha Empires get a scout carrier X-ship. So it's got special sensors and it's got room for six heavy fighters. And I guess it's like an alternative to a fast patrol ship sender. There is actually in Captain's Log 48 a non-X CSV that was given for the Paravians. So in theory, you could take that SSV and Xify it. But the result's probably not that great because it doesn't have a lot of heavy weapons on the hull itself. So it's not that great for going after Andromedans, for example.
Right.
But actually, it just occurred to me that so further down that same list, I was suggesting Maulers for the Paravians, but Module X1R also gives you X-Maulers. So in theory, if it's okay to give them non-X-Maulers, you could give them X-Maulers too. So I guess that's two more SSVs you can add to the list. But yes, we would need rules to represent the X-Tech Quantum Wave Torpedo. But aside from that, everything else the Alpha Octane Paravians use is coverable in the standard X rules. There's no need to add any additional toys.
It should be interesting to see if the Quantum Wave Torpedoes can make use of something like the Plasma Sabot rules, or if they get their own special dispensation on advancements in the tech tree.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm actually, I guess I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't already get a stable rule for Y180 to keep up with plasma, because
I think that came about because C6 really predated. Go ahead.
No, actually. The stable rules were introduced in R10, I think it was. So they did exist. It's just that there wasn't necessarily a lot of focus on the late war era by then so far, because a lot of the material, I don't know. I mean, I guess it wasn't seen as that big a deal back then, but I just personally wonder if it's a problem later on. But yes, I mean, in theory, extra quantum wave torpedoes could be given the stable as well. But I'm not too sure I'd want to give the X-Tech version of the weapon too many toys, because one of the things that I personally like about the weapon is that it's relatively simple. It's almost Omega-like in that sense, because a lot of Omega weapons are very clear. Like, for example, they don't have pseudo-torpedoes, they don't have ECM torpedoes or whatever, or drones. Like, you know, if you're flying a Trobwind ship, you've got different sizes of implosion weapon, but they all function the same. They're all VL torpedoes and so on. And also that means that they're easier to convert to Federation Commander. So I would, yes, definitely like to see some improvements for the Quantum Wave Torpedo.
Right.
But personally speaking, I wouldn't want it to go too crazy.
Right. And the to me, especially because you were talking about first generation X-ships here, which means that X1 technology isn't that big of a difference, and obviously the first thing you want to do is compare that with the other X-ship tech, you know, other X-ship weapons, you know, first generation, that make sure it's around the same. Now, one quick thing is when it comes, you mentioned Maulers, but outside of the Klingons and the Romulans, were there anyone else who actually used Maulers?
Lyrans.
So historic Lyrans, yes.
Lyrans.
The Winds, they used the Mauler to attack one of the Tinti bases during the War of Return. And yes, the Lyrans did get, they got Mauler because they were part of the Coalition, so the Klingons provided them with Mauler technology from the Romulans. But in the MUCH-EP, the Romulans and the Paravians are aligned with each other against the Gorns and ISC. So the Paravians would probably need those Maulers if they're trying to attack go on ISC starbases or like planets or whatever. So
here's a scary thought.
I don't think it's entirely unreasonable. Yeah, but
I was just thinking that basically, can you imagine how crazy things would be if you had a Peruvian Warhol that had four or five QWTs and a plasma F or two and a cloak. It wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen.
It's
one of those things that just when you say the two of them became allies in this one specific fashion, and you see what the Romulans historically shared with their allies, it scratches your head and go.
Yeah, well, actually, that's true. But of course, the cloaking device is one of those things that the Romulans were not really. They were very reticent to actually share with other people.
Right.
But at the same time,
the other thing is the cloak, tactically speaking, I mean, it makes sense if your ship needs three turns to arm. But if you've got a ship that fire a weapon that fires every turn, it's less practical. But I did actually think that there's a different post on the BBS where I was once suggesting that it'd be interesting if there had been a Lost Empire timeline where Romulans never actually treated with the Klingons, and instead they treated with the Peruvians a few decades earlier, mm-hmm. where they basically started building Peruvian-type ships under license, but the ones that they built would have plasma torpedoes and cloaking devices. So that means that, you know how on Shapeways you can buy miniatures in the ultra-fine detail plastic so it's see-through?
Yeah.
So that be given Romulan players an excuse to buy two miniatures for each Peruvian ship that they build. One to represent the undercloak, and the other one with not cloaks.
Mm-hmm. And you bring up a very interesting point, which is that the Quantumwing torpedo is single turn arming, and therefore really wouldn't take advantage of having a cloaking device. At least it wouldn't be as a requirement compared to the Romulans, who have a three-turn army weapon. But one thing that brings me to think about is some of the older actual cloaking tech. You know, was it the veiling device?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Veil.
Yeah.
Masking and veil.
Yeah.
And yeah, the thing is that the quantum wave torpedo ships might not need tactical cloaking, but they probably could take very good advantage of strategic cloaking.
Agreed, or at the very least, a way of, what I was thinking of was a way that you don't cloak, but you can, using a device, you can actually make it much harder to actually hit their ship, which is cheaper than possibly, or even, can be used in addition to ECM.
Right.
Well, here's the thing. You know how a lot of Peruvian ships have large impulse decks? So, for example, the Peruvian heavy cruiser has six impulse boxes, whereas the average is like four or so. So that is actually convenient because if you're approaching an enemy planet or base, you can go on erratic maneuvers and not have to use warp power to do it. So you're actually approaching faster, but you're still getting the benefit of erratic maneuvers.
That's one of the very
that you get close enough to.
Very interesting things about the Peruvians is they can do erratic on impulse. Hmm. Usually, that's something that only nimble ships can accomplish.
Yeah, I did not know that.
So, anyway, so I guess another topic. I guess we're still running out of time, but another aspect of what I was basically doing the list for the Peruvians here was the concept of their local defense ships. So the module R8 includes concepts of like ships like the National Guards. So they're ships that still have early years warp engines, but they've got modern weapons. And that same principle could apply to the Peruvians, but with one big difference is because in module C6, it's specified that when the Middle Years Peravian ships first get built, they're able to solve the problem that they had in the early years, where basically, like in Omega, when the Prober start losing their warp engines to the left and right, the ship actually decreases its turn mode.
Right.
And so the early years Peravians had the same problem. Now, the modern Peravian ships in Module C6 don't have that problem. They managed to fix it. But I would say that the local defense ships should still have that problem because they still have early years engines. So even if you give the ship phaser ones and if you give it quantum wave torpedoes, and if you get rid of the non-weapon option boxes and, like, quote-unquote standardize the interior of these ships, which I think is logical for them to do, I still think that both engineering-wise and also in flavor-wise, in terms of, like, the way the SSDs should be presented to make them interesting, I think that they should retain the turn mode problems that the earlier ships have.
That makes sense, considering that it would be a function of the warp engines available, because you're not going to let your National Guard units have your latest and greatest. You're going to have let them have the minimum quality necessary to get the job done.
Right, and it's local defense. They're not going to be going outside the system. At least that's that's the point. You know, as long as they can adequately defend, you know, the systems that they need to defend. You know, having less powerful engines, it should be fine.
Make them monitors.
And, yeah. Well, I mean, they can get monitors too. So I suppose in theory, because I think, is it module R1 or one of the others that actually provides separate monitor SSDs for like the...
Yeah, that was module R1, yeah.
So you could do the same for the Peravians and Carnivons, like... Here's the default. I mean, because module C6, it actually has a section in the rule book that actually tells you, okay, so if you've got all these generic units,
right,
these are what they have.
Right.
So you basically literally just take that exact description, put it in an SSD form, and boom, that's an extra SSD. So anyway, actually, that is another point, because there's a number of these civilian units and stuff like Prime Corvettes and so on that in principle could be given Peravian and Carnivon specific ones based on those rules. But
just basically in short, the R1 units that aren't in C6.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, another big thing as well is so in C6 itself, most of the Peravian ships still have three engines, with the main exception is the heavy war destroyer. So that ship has four engines. And basically, you know, similar to like what other empires do, like, for example, you know, the Federation war destroyer becomes the heavy war destroyer, they slap a fourth frigate engine on there to help power the ship. But the additional mass means that it moves slower, so it all balances out. So now the question would be, should the concept of a four engine Peravian ship be unique to the heavy war destroyer? Or should it be something that other classes of Peravian ship can do? So, for example, can you take a Peravian war cruiser and bulk it up and give it a fourth engine and you've got a new heavy cruiser? Or can you not do that? As in, like, does the engineering not allow it? Or in game design terms, is it not a good idea to let them do that? So now, initially, years ago, I would have said no, because kind of felt like it was a little bit samey to like go that route.
Mm-hmm.
But now, more than I think about it, it seems that there's nothing really to stop it from happening. And also, in the long term, it might be interesting if you had it that maybe some of these four engine ships show up in Omega, and that's instead of some of the three engine ones, if that makes sense. So that could be a way to help leverage the material in a different way. But in any case, if you do open the door to more four engine ships, that's at least seven or eight new base hulls and a couple dozen other mission variants like scout ships and commando ships and carriers and PF tenders and so forth that you can add in on top of that. So that's already pushing the module up to about 50 or 60 SSDs at least. Maybe more, because you could probably get 80 even. And then you start asking yourself, well, that's 80 SSDs. That's a lot. I mean, that's more than C6 itself has. And then you start having to say, Well, do the Praetorians need all those SSDs? Or should they, some of those be stuck in the drawer and used for a C6B 10 years from now?
Right.
So, yeah, but that is actually kind of, to back to the overall point where I'm basically, I would argue that the risk is not having not enough Praetorian or Carnivon SSD to fill out this module. The risk is, depending on which way you let things go technology-wise, is not overflowing again. So, yeah, so it goes like with the Carnivons, you've got the added issue where most of the combat variants would need to have additional SSDs for their Deathbolt versions. So any, like, for example, right now there's a Deathbolt heavy cruiser and there's a Deathbolt war cruiser. I think there's a couple of others too. So if you start giving the Paravians, my voice is starting to go there. If you start giving the Carnivons a three-engine new heavy cruiser, then naturally you're going to give them a new heavy Deathbolt cruiser as well. And so the Carnivon list is probably going to be, once again, a bit longer than the Paravian list, even if you've got the same range of new hulls. So, yeah, basically, no, again, if others have other ideas, that's great, but please add them into the thread. But, yeah, I definitely think that there's plenty of work to be done. There's plenty of work that can be done to completely top up this module, maybe even leave a little bit spare for a future with just those two empires. And, again, that list that I drew up, by no means perfect.
Right.
He literally came up with a couple of ships that could have gone on there that I forgot about the first time. But FDX Maulers and so on.
Right.
But yeah, I basically, I'd hope that that list, you know, such as it is, at least shows how much material there is out there to work with if ADB or if the fans like want to work with it or see fit to work with it.
That does seem to be a good starting point.
Agreed. Yeah, I noticed Chuck Strong came in and went, oh, you know, we're missing this, and this. And some of these were for, like, campaigns. Campaign shit, and all the R in the winds.
Yeah, the...
But I'll tell you what, actually, I was looking at his list about the idea about doing super heavy Saltorian stuff, but I actually think it'd be interesting to go in the opposite direction and give the Saltorians a corvette that has a single boom and two engines that are three boxes each, and then give them a police frigate that has two booms, and then a police destroyer that has three booms. So either for use in patrol scenarios in the home galaxy, or say, for example, we were talking before about the idea of the Saltorian showing up in Omega. So if they're showing up in a place where there's a lot of open space and they have the potential to start an empire of their own, or to at least, you know, they can claim it's in case of Saltorian show up.
Mm-hmm.
So they would need police ships to help patrol that and keep the Zosman Marauders or other kind of pirates out of the way.
Right.
So then it would make sense for them to have a smaller unit that they can build multiples of. And so a nice corvette or a nice police frigate might be an interesting thing to leverage in that circumstance.
Oh, agreed.
You should post a thread about that in the BBS somewhere.
Yeah. And
but it should be a C6R. It should be somewhere else.
Right, right. And well, I think what we're talking about, again, is for them, we're talking about campaign ships. Ships that aren't historical, but if you want to play the Empire as in a campaign setting, you kind of need to support the campaign.
It's also like the same group of, to kind of bring it back to Federation and Empire, there are a number of strata. You've got frigates, you've got destroyers, you've got escort destroyers, you've got war destroyers, you've got cruisers, you've got new cruisers, you've got war cruisers, you've got all these stratas, and some empires use specific names for them, like the Romulans and the Hydrans, and you have other empires that don't.
But the thing is that if you look at it objectively, you have ships in all those slots going from down to the smallest of the corvettes all the way up to the battleships and everywhere in between. And the thing is, we could talk to the cows come home about how many different designs we the Peravians or the Carnivans and whoever else needs to have and don't. But the thing is that if they have ships that are filling the roles that need filled, it might be a hard sell to create a bunch of designs that might not be used very often.
Right. Well,
it all comes back down to where the deficiencies are.
Oh, agreed. And of course, what Steve Cole points out, which is, if players will buy it, I will print it.
Yes, yes.
Plain and simple.
The final thing I would say, though, is
yes.
Sorry. The final thing I'd say for tonight, at least, is I mean, I'm not massively fond of the idea of giving battleships that are for empires that are too small to ever even consider building one.
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't want to see. I mean, in theory, yes, you could give the Windfluster a battleship SSD, and you could give one for the Thudar, you could give one for someone else who's small, LDR maybe. I think there actually already is. Like, I think in Federation Commander, the SSD for the Lyran battleship actually has a little box on the side that says, if the LDR ever get one of these, here's where the Gatling phasers go. But I'm not necessarily quite as keen on that. I think,
yeah.
But on the other hand, Carnivans and Peravians are, at the very least, they would have been medium-sized powers. Mm-hmm. So it's about as reasonable for them to have considered a battleship as it is for any of the empires in Module R5 that get conjectural battleships.
Right.
Like, yeah. If the Hydrans or the Kazintis or the Lyran Empire have these battleship options on the table. Although, actually, I think the Lyrans are probably... They would have been a reasonable one because they basically just need to build a center section that's sturdy enough to fit the heavy cruiser bits on either side. Like, so, you know, they don't have to start entirely from scratch the way that, like, the Hydrans would.
Right.
The Hydrans would have had to build an entirely new pilot bit all from scratch. So, anyway, so away from that. But, I basically, it makes more sense because there already are battleship SSDs, of course, in Module C6. But I think that for an empire that's intended to be at least reasonably considered to be a contender empire in terms of being like a significant player in the Octant, then it makes more sense for them. And for a similar reason, over in Omega, there's a thread of talking about Omega battleships, and I think that there's no reason to give all 20 something Omega factions a battleship. I think it's the ones that historically are at least medium sized or bigger that actually have the production facilities needed to construct a battleship. I think it's those would make sense for a campaign, and some of them might even end up being historical. But some of the super small empires that don't have the tools to be able to build a ship that big, I think they should not get a battleship SSD, or at least it shouldn't be a high priority, because it would be basically an impossible haul rather than being a campaign variant, if that makes sense. Like, if you think about it in the Module R9, the way of phrasing things, there's a difference on the master ship chart in terms of a ship that's campaign conjectural and a ship that's impossible.
Right.
So, like, for example, the Vary Combine, none of the cells of the Combine are big enough to build even a Dreadnought. So for them, a battleship is impossible. So, but on the other hand, like, say, the Trobriand Empire, they have a pretty hefty Dreadnought as it stands. So I'd say, you know, it wouldn't be entirely out of bounds for the Trobriand to have a battleship. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty interesting ship to see, actually, in SSD form. So, yes, basically, to apply it back to Alpha, I'd say the same is true, where, I mean, if there's really that much of a demand out there to have, like, a Vudar battleship SSD somewhere, fair enough. But I think it's better to try to keep the focus on ships that are reasonable for each empire to operate based on the scale of the empire in question.
Right, right. Specifically,
there's kind of a flip side in all that, too, which is basically that
there was an era where they did a bunch of cookie cutter designs for all the empires for, and it was really around the general war stuff, but it kind of killed the flavor of the original game, where it wasn't quite as everybody had everything, and you know, the races were unique and different because they were unique and different, and not everybody had, you know, a class XYZ that's perfectly balanced. So, like, yeah, totally agree with you on the whole idea of like the different sized powers having the capability of fielding those large ships, but not necessarily all of those different powers doing it. That makes total sense.
Right. Yeah. And
sorry, go on.
Right. And I think the criticality there is conjectural versus, you know, campaign only. You know, or it was conjectural, I guess. But, you know, ones, ships that fill a certain role, if you're going to be using this empire as for campaigns where their actual size on the map for the FNE map doesn't matter, you know, versus historically, you know, this empire might never have created this ship because of they're very small, and they, you know, never had the resource to build, to actually, well, not build. They probably had the resource to build, but just not the resources really to waste on a single ship versus a lot, like four or five smaller ships. That idea. Yeah.
And that's the great thing about Omega, in that even if we do get, like, because, I mean, historically, you know, we do, ships like war cruisers and war destroyers do eventually appear in Omega. But if or when we ever see them in SSD form, they don't have to go to cookie cutter route. They will still, you know, if they're done properly, maintain the diversity of, like, performance levels or mission focus and technology and so forth that was, you know, not quite the same in Alpha. So I think that there's a great opportunity there to give them ships that are competitive, but not do it in a way that's cookie cutter, as I said. So, but, you know, short of that, I do think that the Paravians and Carnivons do offer something different. And also on a strategic level, the Paravians in particular, they give the likes of the ISC and Romulans and Gorns a lot more, like they're instigators in a sense that they make that third of the map much more dynamic than it is historically, at least until the pacification happens. So, yeah.
Understood. Well, with that, it's time to wrap it up for this evening. It's been wonderful to discuss the module C6 and possibilities there. You know, I think having a C6R shipped out the door and people buying it, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I would actually like to see more of the Paravians. The Carnivons too, but to a lesser extent. The thing is that both the Carnivon and the Paravian empires have a certain flavor that seems to be missing in quite a bit of the Alpha Octant stuff, and it's better connected to the other Alpha Octant stuff, which means you don't have quite the learning curve as you do with a lot of the Omega. There seems some of the people I've talked to over the years have said that one of the reasons they didn't really dig into Omega too much was it seemed like it was two thirds of the game they knew, and the one third that wasn't was all the important parts.
Understood.
Well, I think part of the problem there is that they should have probably made it clearer that the core group of empires in Omega are relatively easy to learn, like the Mistrons and Trobriand, and they should have been more careful to mark the likes of the Soldra and L'Oreal and the Barthenons as, like, you know, further depth only, because I feel like by putting too much of a grab bag of empires in the first module was probably the big, well, I mean, they already know this, but it's like, it was the biggest mistake in terms of losing that clear focus that Omega needs. But hopefully it's not too late to, you know, try things in a different direction, though.
Oh, agreed. Well, Gary, thank you for bringing up such a wonderful topic, and you have a good night.
Thank you. And one finally, anyone listening, if they have any ideas for the Lost Empires or Bork or Paladin or anything else, get on the BBS and state your case.
I agree. Okay, see ya. Jeff, always a pleasure to have you around.
Yeah.
Always glad to hear your voice, because that means you're still safe.
I appreciate that, even if I do interject some problems every now and then.
Oh, that happens, but that's fine, you know. Keeps things interesting.
Yes, it does.
Anyway, you drive safely.
I'll do that. I'll be safe.
Okay, good. Have a good night. Okay, bye. Doug!
Yes.
You're relatively quiet, but that's fine.
Like, everybody had a lot to say about the topic tonight, and it's nice to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So, understood. It's interesting.
Agreed.
It's like, I got my little 2 cents in there at the end.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But yeah, that's, looking forward to seeing you this weekend.
Same here. Okay, well, you have a good night.
Not sure how much we'll get to talk about stuff. Good night.
Yes, it is getting late, folks. And I actually, believe it or not, I actually have to sleep, you know, sometime between tonight and tomorrow morning. That's always a good thing. But anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.